Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 111 of the History Hotline. My name is Deanna Lynn Cook and as always, I'll be your host today. This episode is all about the Windrush scandal. Now, it's not an episode I've done on this podcast before, but I have spoken about the Windrush scandal on another podcast, a podcast I did before the History Hotline was even a thought, called Educate, which is my friend's podcast. And on that episode, I went into detail on the Windrush scandal and spoke about the Lessons Learned report that had recently come out. This was in 2020, so about 3 years ago. I haven't actually spoken in depth about the scandal on this podcast and wanted to take the opportunity as we approach the 75th anniversary of the arrival of the Windrush ship into the UK, which is often known and often marks the start, or it's not the actual start, but it's known as the start of post-war migrations, the start of what people refer to as the Windrush generation. And although there were ships that arrived before the Windrush, at the end of World War II, there were two ships before that, the Ormond and the Almanzora in 1947. 1948 tends to mark the start of this these migrations, this wave of migration from people from the Caribbean, especially. Whilst they weren't the only people aboard these ships, this is what this kind of time is known for and it's symbolic of. But I just don't really think that it's possible to be speaking about the context of the Windrush in any context with the word celebration next to it. I think we are in a time where we have got to think about the scandal. We've got to think about what was done to people of that generation, cruelly and callously by the Home Office, by the British government, because of, I would argue, a deliberate policy to remove black people from this country. Now, this episode, don't think I'll be pulling any punches. I have a lot to say, a lot to get off my chest in part one of the Windrush scandal episode. And we're going to start by casting our minds all the way back to 2012.
Others would come from other lands, in particular from the West Indies.
That was audio taken from the 2012 Olympic opening ceremony, which was for the Olympics that were in London, and it was directed, organised, I'm not sure what the correct word is, by Danny Boyle. And within his opening ceremony, there was a section that focused on British history. One of the elements of that was the Windrush, and they had a mock ship, which was assembled of like steel rods, and they had fabric around it that made it look like newspapers from the time. And they had actors on stilts playing the passengers, and there were men carrying their suitcases, their grips, walking behind as if they were passengers and as if the Windrush had just docked at Tilbury. Really similar to the Pathé newsreel that is often shared to mark the arrival of the ship and the passengers. The Windrush ship, as it is, tends to be a kind of symbolic representation of post-war migrations of people from the Caribbean. It's the name that they have been labelled with, the Windrush generation, and that tends to speak on the kind of migrations that started after the Nationality Act in 48. And it takes us to about 1973, where those dates are very pertinent for this Windrush scandal, which we're going to get into shortly. You might be thinking, why did we start with 2012 and the opening ceremony? Well, I thought it'd be nice to cast our mind back to a simpler time, 2012. I mean, it was a simpler time for me, probably because I was a child without bills, which is always a nicer time to be alive. But 2012, it's an important time in this kind of Windrush scandal story. And you might know the answer, but I'm not going to get there for a bit. So I wanted to think about this kind of context of the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games. And I was led to an article by Steve Rose that came out last year in The Guardian. And it's titled, "A Jerusalem for Everyone. Was the 2012 Olympics the last gasp of liberal Britain?" And I'm not really going to get too bogged down with the politics and the political leanings of this country and how far we've swayed from 2012 and the moment of the Olympic Games. But I wanted to kind of pull out some points that were brought up in the article, because I think it's quite an important reflection, this kind of 10-year period. Where we have in 2012 this moment where migration is being celebrated as an element, a key part of British history. You know, the Olympic ceremony goes out to the world. It is a global games. Everybody takes part in it. Everybody is involved in it in some way, whether you're a spectator or you're, you know, you're volunteering maybe in London, or you were a fan, or you just wanted to watch on the TV and see your favourite sporting star in whatever sport they were representing their nation in. You know, the Olympic Games are a really big event, and on a global stage in front of the whole world, it was decided that the Windrush and subsequent migrations would be celebrated. I don't think in, you know, the kind of 10 years that follow that moment, have we had a moment, have we had a point in time where we've celebrated migration, where we've celebrated the arrival of non-white British people to Britain? I don't think we have. And there was some critique of the opening ceremony for being quote-unquote too liberal and left-wing and all this stuff, that I think is quite relevant for an Olympic ceremony, if I'm honest, that is, you know, trying to actually make Britain look good and show it off in the best way possible on a global stage. And from the article, and I quote, "We could even laugh about our notoriously crap weather. Fake clouds were paraded around the stadium that night, but real clouds were looming for Britain. Brexit and its ongoing repercussions, of course. Not to mention the Windrush scandal, the COVID pandemic, the cost of living crisis, deportations to Rwanda. I barely need go on. Such a moment of national pride, confidence and unity now seems almost unimaginable. As a result, the 2012 opening ceremony, officially titled Isles of Wonder, has become something of a cultural touchstone. For many, it has effectively become shorthand for Britain before it all turned to shit." Now, this part of the article is funny to me because, and we'll get into this later, but 2012 is also important because it marks the moment that Theresa May, as Home Secretary at the time, and having been Home Secretary for 2 years at that point, starts off with her hostile policy. And, you know, at this point that we're referencing as this cultural touchstone, as this moment in time where things were better, the hostile policy and the hostile environment was well underway and the deportations had begun. And it's very interesting that we're looking back to 2012, where the Windrush is literally being celebrated on a global platform, at the exact same time as that generation are literally being faced with papers telling them that they are illegally here, they need to prove that they have the right to stay in this country, that they have been here since prior to 1973. It's very interesting that this is all happening at exactly the same time, and that line needs to be drawn. I think that those two strings need to be tied together, and we've got to understand the links within this story and within time. And just how long and how pervasive the hostile policy and environment was, and the impact it was having on people of this generation that were being celebrated. Now, when I was conjuring up this episode, I was thinking, you know, if Britain were to host an Olympic Games anytime soon, let's say this summer or next summer, could it be like that? Could the opening ceremony look like that? And I don't think it could. I think the tone of this country politically is too poor, especially politically. It's so divided, or so it seems, not just politically, but along racial lines, along class lines. Basically, anything we can find within us to hold us a part of our identity is causing some kind of division. And, you know, there's that side and there's this side and there's no in between. There's no point for compromise. It's like you're on the left or you're on the right and you believe in this or you believe in that. And I just don't see us having anything like that in this country any point soon, which is sad in a way. But also maybe a good thing, because the irony that we were celebrating something that was actually being run through the Home Office and targeting that same generation that were on stage being celebrated, maybe it's a good thing actually that instead of covering up and plastering over all the kind of ugliness and racism and discrimination that happens in this country, it's actually all being shown, it's all being brought to the light, and we can all see it very clearly. And instead of, you know, clapping and cheering for an opening ceremony that, whilst it was probably genuine in its intentions to celebrate this generation, also mark the start of the witch hunt, essentially, to send them back home. In 2012, at this point, the hostile environment was already being felt by many, and we wouldn't really know the true extent for another 5 or 6 years in 2012. Theresa May had been 2 years as Home Secretary under her belt. She was appointed when the Conservative and Liberal Democrat coalition government came in 2010, with David Cameron and Nick Clegg. Theresa May announced a policy strategy aimed at combating, and I quote, illegal immigration, by making it so unbearable for undocumented immigrants that they would voluntarily choose to leave. And that was the start date of what we know as the hostile environment today. In her own words, she aimed to, quote, create here in Britain a really hostile environment for illegal immigrants. That's where it kind of gets the title. But the concept of this hostile environment had been introduced as early as 2007 under the new Labour Immigration Minister, Liam Byrne. 2012 saw the first systemic implementation of the strategy, but it was as early as 2007 that the Home Office actually received complaints about people that had lived in England before 1973 being asked to prove their legal status from Commonwealth countries, which obviously they would have been British citizens at the time of their migration to Britain. So they shouldn't really have to be proving anything. Now, we don't really talk about what happened between 2007 to 2012, probably because the amount of cases that were being brought to the Home Office were really small in comparison to what's happened kind of since, and especially up to 2018, where the story really broke into kind of the public discourse and we kind of really figured the extent of it, and we started to hear about the individual stories of people that had been, you know, sent to deportation centres and been put on flights and had been actually deported, those who had lost their lives, and those who had battled mental health issues, failing physical health, who were denied treatment, who lost their jobs, their homes and all that stuff. That kind of story broke in 2018, but we rarely go back to 2007 and think about some of those really early people that probably wouldn't even have, first of all, understood, because, you know, it's difficult to understand they've been deported from a country you've lived in for the vast majority of your life. And I'm talking a lot of the people that would have come in the time period that would have seen them targeted would have come over as children or babies. This England is their home. That's all they know to be home. And so the fact that these people were being targeted as early as 2007, when this kind of public information, this wealth of knowledge we have now, the legal teams that take on these cases to fight and win compensation and support those that are being deported, those resources were not available to them. They were not able to articulate probably what was happening and reach out to the relevant people for help because it wasn't a widely publicised issue. And so it's very, very difficult.
Moro Casino, America. Moca Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
To actually even figure out who would have been impacted that early. Of course, the Home Office would know, and those people that filed complaints would have been recorded. But in a lot of information that is out and available, we don't really speak too much about those people that would have been impacted at that early stage in 2007. Now, with all that being said, I figure people might be wondering why these episodes are about the Windrush scandal, when Windrush Day is pending and it's supposed to be a celebration of this generation. Now, if you listen to me for a while, especially last year, then you'll know the kind of questioning that goes on in my mind when it comes to these celebrations. And last year's episode, I can't remember what number it was, but it was something along the lines of, what are we actually celebrating for Windrush Day? And I also spoke about the statue that went up at, I think, Waterloo Station, train station, that was commemorating the generation. And every time I do these reflections, the same answer is brought to the forefront of the fact that how can we possibly celebrate something when there are people that have been impacted by this scandal in the most horrible and terrible ways that still have not been compensated, still have no trust in the British government system, Home Office system, deportation justice system, whatever system you want to think about, and live in fear, live with the trauma of what has happened to them. Personally, I actually don't think Windrush Day would be a thing, or celebrated, shall we say, to the extent that we see it today. And celebrate is the wrong word. I'm going to say commemorate. I'm going to say recognised. I'm going to say part of, you know, people's scheduling, regular scheduling events. You know, people are doing things for Windrush Day, whether that is people within Caribbean communities or it's people outside of that, it's that generation or generations underneath. Unfortunately for me, it seems to be the case that we are just constantly reminded that black life doesn't really matter. It only matters when it's too late or something fatal happens or someone literally loses their life, which is the case of a lot of the stories of the deportations within the Windrush scandal. It's like we're only going to actually start, you know, doing Windrush Day and celebrating people in this generation because of how bad things got when Britain decided to start deporting people illegally. Secondly, the second reason that we have to talk about the Windrush scandal before any kind of commemorations of any kind of Windrush generation or post-war migrants or whatever else, because there is a fact that a large portion of people waiting for compensation, adequate compensation, I'll put that word in, that adjective, adequate compensation, are still waiting. And we have got to do better at putting pressure on whoever needs to have pressure applied, because there are so many people that have been offered payouts that have been absolute peanuts. Peanuts and pennies for what they've actually gone through. Loss of earnings, you know, lack of access to healthcare, lawyer fees and all that kind of stuff. Some lawyers have worked pro bono on some of these cases, I will say. But a lot of people have had to fight, you know, themselves. They've put their family through so much. Well, they haven't put their family through stress. The British government has put their family through stress by way of their stories. They have had to go through and endure so much. And the compensation payouts have been just atrocious, really. I think in 2020, it was less than 1% of the money set aside, the £200 million set aside in compensation was given out. Don't get me wrong, things have changed since then. And I think they're nearing about £56 million pounds have been offered in compensation so far. But I actually don't, that, you know, numbers are a bit weird to me because 200 million sounds like a whole lot of money. But when you actually think about the amount of people that were impacted and, you know, if you're impacted and you're told you can't work and your job pays you, I don't know, like £30,000 a year and you're out of work for 2 years, surely you should be being paid a minimum of 60K, let alone all the other costs that you would have incurred. Things like fines, things like bailiff fees, you know, there's so many things that you would have potentially had to deal with as a result of not having earnings, not being able to pay for things and, you know, things of that nature. So the fact that we're at like what, I think it's about 65 million offered. I think it's about 55 million that's been paid out. This is as of January 2023. This is from government records that are available online if you ever care to read them. It's a big old spreadsheet. I'll drop it in the show notes if I remember. Quite an interesting read. You can also look at the breakdown of the different countries people have come from that have been impacted by this scandal that have been making claims. Countries from all over the world. We're speaking about people from the Caribbean, but it's not just people from the Caribbean that were impacted by the hostile environment. That will be part of these people seeking compensation and seeking justice for what has happened to them. Third reason that we just cannot really be celebrating this Windrush Day and all this kind of things. And I will speak so plainly when I say this, and as sad as about what I'm going to say sounds, I truly believe this with my whole heart, that as Black people in Britain, we can never forget that our place is tentative. I don't think it's wise for any Black people, non-white people, maybe we'll go as far as saying that, people to feel comfortable here. Unfortunately, I don't think that is wise. And I don't mean to tell people how to feel, especially about a place that they call home and have lived their whole lives, their parents have lived and their grandparents have lived. But we're just so often reminded that our citizenship can be taken at any time, that we can be deported, that we can be barred from work and public services and lose our livelihoods and our lives if the right or wrong politician decides it. We've seen the laws that are being slipped through Parliament these days, done episodes on them. You know, there are laws that say that, you know, if you are undesirable, if you are a threat to Britain's safety, you will be made stateless, you know? These things are not okay, personally, to me. And are the main reason why I don't think with a position so precarious in this country, it's ever a good idea to get caught up in the celebration of our lives and our contribution to Britain and that of our ancestors. And as negative and as defeatist as that might sound, I can't stress it enough. And if we don't really scream and shout about what has happened and what is still happening to this specific generation of people, to their descendants, I believe we're resigning ourselves to see it happen again and again. Because, you know, this country, until it really, really seriously gets to grips with the way this country operates, the racism that is meted out by the state and by institutions, nothing will ever change. And number four, fourth reason why I don't feel like celebration makes sense, and I've got to talk more about the scandal above everything else, is because some of these dusty, crusty Conservative and some Labour MPs really need to feel the pressure of what is going on and the magnitude of what has happened. Because I too often hear the term Windrush scandal being thrown into this long list of government failings, conservative failings, like it's, I don't know, like a bag of flour on a shopping list. Oh, here's all the things that the Tories or Theresa May or Amber Rudd or David Cameron or Boris Johnson did badly. Brexit, COVID, Windrush. Like, no. No. That is a shopping list. That is read like a shopping list. These things have monumental impact on people's lives. Brexit, COVID, Windrush scandal, you know? It's spoken about like it's this little administrative mishap. It was a deliberate policy to systemically target black people, and we can never forget that. This country did that over a decade of policy shifts, changes, pressure from different areas within the Home Office, within different factions of politics in this country, whether that be the far right, UKIP, the BNP. All of this was very deliberate. It was not accidental. And we have got to understand that. And please, if you don't remember anything else from this episode today or the episodes that will follow, please remember that this was deliberate. Now, I had intended to go on and talk about the Windrush Lessons Learned Review by Wendy Williams, which is a report that makes, I think, around 30 recommendations for change and improvement within the Home Office. And this was published in 2020. It was published very quickly and very quietly while everybody else was thinking about COVID, because it was about March time. I think it was March or April. We were all in the midst of lockdown, panic. You know, it was a crazy time. And of course, that was the best time for them to put out this report that criticises the Home Office and the racism, and actually points out the fact that this was a deliberate policy to target black people in this country. It, of course, it went out at that time of the year. You know, COVID masked a lot of things that were happening in the world, and the Windrush scandal was one of them. Now, within that Lessons Learnt review, which we're going to talk about next episode, because I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm making a conscious effort to keep these episodes to around 30 minutes. And I know some of you really like the long episodes, but I don't know if that's the most effective way to take in history, because I think for the most part, people's attention span is around 20 minutes. So me talking on, pushing an hour, maybe you're not taking all of it in. Well, maybe you are. Maybe you listen in parts. Maybe you're an attentive listener. But these episodes, moving forward, we're aiming for 30 minutes, and it's about 25 minutes and 30 seconds in. So we're going to talk about the Lessons Learned review, report done next episode. And we're going to also go into a little bit more information on the Windrush scandal, what it actually was, what actually happened. Because I realise it's a buzzword. It is, as I said, it's an item on the shopping list of Tory failings. But we don't actually, a lot of the time, well, not me personally, but a lot of people actually don't know what actually happened, how this was, how this came to be. So we're going to go into all the small, intricate details of it. And I think I'm going to try and bring in some people that have been impacted by the Windrush scandal, some of their stories, not the people themselves, but some of their stories that have been publicised and are quite accessible now, through work done by The Guardian, through a BBC drama that came out, I think it was Sitting in Limbo, that came out in 2020 as well. So there's a lot of information out there. I think if you listen to this episode and you're waiting for the next one, have a look at what's out there on the scandal, do some reading, and then we can come back again next week and talk more about it. Thank you so much for listening to this week's introductory episode. I hope you have a wonderful week. Goodbye.
To this week's episode of the History Hotline. To continue the conversation, follow us on social media at the History Hotline on Instagram and at the History HL on Twitter. The History Hotline is hosted by Deanna Lynn Cook. Research is done by Zaki Arias.
Moro Casino, America. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.